Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Hey, this is J. Michael Michael, and I'd like to welcome you to LA Talk Radio. And if you're like me, you love talk radio. And if you're also like me, you can't find anything on the AM dial to listen to. Well, how about this? How about you tune in to LA Talk Radio? You see, LA Talk Radio is the biggest and the best in LA, and it is a .com. So we've got everything from sports to music to self-help to just about anything, including talk. And right now, we've got the new writer's favorite show, The Writer's Block. So sit back, grab that glass of wine, a little bit of box of chocolates. Sit back, enjoy, because it all starts right now.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Bob Brill. Only on LA Talk Radio.
So just in case you guys don't know what that was Sly and the Family Stone and Everyday People. And I couldn't have come up with a more honest rendition of what this book about that we're going to be talking about tonight.
That's a great choice.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, Bobby Jean.
Yeah.
Yeah, how are you?
Yeah.
Man, we're getting closer and closer and closer to that Cowboy Festival.
I know, the Buckaroo Bookshop and the Out West stage at the Santa Clarita Cowboy Fest.
I'm going through withdrawals.
Well, we're going to really miss you. I think we should just keep a seat there and put your name on the, like, you know, and say, be back in a few minutes.
Oh, I like
so, it. It'll be so strange to not have you with us this
it'll
year.
It'll be strange for me not being there.
Yeah, well, I mean, you could come visit.
Well, if I had time,
like I did last year.
Yeah, that's right. That's true. Well, you're going to be in the studio, of course. On the 9th, we have Junie Fisher, in the studio with us, and then of course we have our regular show on Thursday night, which will be you and me and Bob Brill all in the studio at the same time, which has never happened.
I know.
So that ought to be interesting. Then, other than that, you know what I did? I actually want to say about maybe 3 months ago. I ordered, 1983, I sent in a compendium of lyrics for my songs and just plain out-and-out poetry and some prose, and like 48 pieces, and I sent it in a collection to get copywritten, and it was copywritten, and I got the Library of Congress number and all that good stuff, and I got copies of it back today only because I want to make a book out of it.
And that's so exciting.
I know, and I started reading these things, and I think, holy crap, I was pretty good.
You're a renaissance man, Mr. Christina.
Not quite, but you know what? I refuse to wear the puffy sleeves and stuff. I just want to do that. So you can renaissance me all you want, just don't put me in puffy sleeves and pantaloons. Okay. We have tonight with us Miss Irene O'Garden. She has won or been nominated for prizes in nearly every writing category, from stage to e-screen, hardcovers, as well as literary magazines and anthologies. Her critically acclaimed play, Women on Fire, played sold-out houses at Off-Broadway's Cherry Lane Theater and was nominated for a Lucille Lortel Award. O'Garden won a Pushcart Prize for her lyric essay, Glad to be Human. And Harper published her first memoir, Fat Girl. Her second, Risking the Rapids, How My Wilderness Journey Healed My Childhood, is forthcoming from Mango, November 2019. So it's not even out yet.
It's actually out. January 19th.
Okay.
Yeah, it's out.
Okay.
It's out.
Her poems and essays have been featured in dozens of literary journals and award-winning anthologies. Fulcrum, published last year by Nirala, is her first poetry collection. Oh, I got to do. See, I knew that there was a reason I was doing this, Irene. And Irene is also a poetry educator. Oh my gosh, I'm going to have to send you a copy now when I get them done. cool. With the Hudson Highlands chapter of the National River of Words program, connecting children to nature via poetry and art. She is joyfully married to writer John Pellmeyer, who was here with us. Golly, I don't know how long ago, but we had a ball with John.
It was fabulous.
I know. He was so good. Please welcome to the Writer's Block, Irene O'Garden.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here, Jim.
Well, we are absolutely thrilled to have you. Trust me, it's been a long road to get you here.
Well, I'm happy to have traveled it.
Well, we are happy that you did.
Dusty road traveled by the cowboys is also traveled by those of us who do not punch cows and ride horses.
That is true, but you could ride in the stagecoach and eat dust for how many hundreds of miles?
Although you did do a little horse riding in this
book. Yes, you did. 10 hours.
I actually did.
Yeah.
A day-long horseback ride, 38 miles into the wilderness.
Isn't that something? Isn't that just the most fun thing?
It was wonderful, and it was more than any of us was really expecting. It was supposed to be about an 8-hour ride.
Uh-huh.
It was an 11-hour ride, and those extra 3 hours uh-huh. make a difference to various portions of our anatomy.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they do. Mm-hmm.
But it was beautiful when we got there, and happily, the horses were rather well-behaved for the most part.
Ah,
except
there you go.
The one
always
that
helps.
Shied and ran one of the young riders had to dodge a tree as the horse was trying to throw him off it, and a stick actually went into his temple.
Yeah,
he fine.
That's what you're saying. It was your nephew, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
That was your nephew. It seems to me.
You can't always expect
no.
Ordinary behavior out of horses and out of wilderness.
No, I mean I did a week long trip across Death Valley on horseback.
Oh my gosh!
It was 6 days. 156 miles, I think, was the total mileage. And,
oh, my gosh.
The third or fourth day we were out, let's see, when we did, the fourth day, it was we got and saddled up and left at 4:30 in the morning and took off. We had to climb 3 mountain ranges that day. And, oh, my God, by the time we were done, we started dark. It was dark and cold when we finished.
We did
the last 4 miles going down this hill and watching the horseshoes in front of us spark up at night. It was really cool to watch, but it was fun. But see, everybody was already used to it, so we didn't get sore, but we did get tired.
Mm-hmm. Oh my
Your
gosh!
Legs get
I bet
real
you
tired.
Got hot too. What time of year?
No,
was
it was in November, so it was beautiful weather out. It was just gorgeous.
Oh, good!
It was just gorgeous. Okay, your book, Risking the Rapids, How My Wilderness Challenge Healed My Childhood. You started, of course you start the book with the death of your brother and your funeral. And then you go in to talk about your childhood. And let's talk about your childhood for a little bit because, it ran a very close parallel to my very own.
And
oh,
mine.
Is that right?
Yes.
And mine.
Mm-hmm. My mother
was
almost identical to the way your mother was.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
And I think, but you know what?
Well, go ahead.
I think a lot of the mothers in the late 40s, 50s, the World War II moms, I think they were kind of like that because that's the way they were brought up.
Yeah, I think that's true. And my mother was even a little further back. For just our listeners who don't know, I was brought up in a large Midwest family and with rather kind of strict Catholicism. And my father was a local television personality. And my mother was, she really enjoyed social things. She enjoyed bridge club and luncheons and so forth. But she was really not a warm person with the children. And she was not only brought up in the years that your parents were brought up in, mm-hmm. but she was mostly brought up by her grandmother, which kind of sent her back an mm-hmm. extra generation.
Gotcha.
So I tried to bear that in mind, especially as I was reflecting on, boy, why can't she hug us? Why can't she show some affection? And for whatever it was, she wasn't wild about me personally. And,
I've got
so
about
I had
that
a
feeling,
bit more,
actually.
More difficulty with that. She just didn't care for me, and so I kind of responded by overeating and putting a lot of weight on. It's like, well, if you're not going to like me, then I'm going to make you really not like me.
Yeah.
And of course, it was a way of trying to comfort myself as well, because I had a kind of bullying brother, who was the brother actually who passed away at the opening of the book.
Right.
That was the brother who died unexpectedly,
right,
which is at that memorial service is where we planned the wilderness trip, mm-hmm, to kind of seek some closure with him and with our family, which, uh-huh, we eventually found. It was a little bit more harrowing than we were expecting. But
you had
how many brothers and sisters in your family?
I'm one of seven.
One of seven, right?
Yes.
And the age range, just so our listeners who know, the age,
sure,
range?
My sister, my eldest sister is now 80, and my youngest sister is now 62. So there's, you know, big... Mm-hmm. Big gap there in age, or big range, I want to,
right,
say.
Right. Well, she was, what, 3 years younger than you?
She's four, I think.
Oh,
yeah.
Four, okay.
Is that Ro?
That's
Ro.
Yeah. You two have a very special bond among all your siblings. It seems like the two of you are very close.
Yes, I would have to agree. Though all of our siblings, with the exception of one brother, have gotten a whole lot closer as the years have gone by. I think we have a lot more understanding of one another. But my baby sister, I'm very close to. We talk frequently, and you know, she helps me decompress things, and I help her process things, and we laugh ourselves silly. And and happily, she was on this journey with me, as with a younger brother of mine. But so she and I could kind of crouch in the tent going, oh my gosh, can you believe what's going on?
Would you say, Irene, that all of the siblings had the same response from your mom when you talk about, you know, she really didn't hug and so forth? Or was it more with you, or was it, you know, kind of across the board? Did you all deal with
it? I think it was kind of across the board. And, you know, here's what happened. She was abandoned by her mother, or was left to be reared by her grandmother and an aunt of hers. In those days, people would sometimes just drop children off with family members if they felt they really couldn't take care of them, and they were on their way to California, and they kind of left my mom in Omaha and essentially never came back to get her. So I know that she came from a great deal of personal pain, but she was the only child in the house, and hence was very spoiled, and always dreamt of having a big family of her own, never really realizing, of course, what that meant in, mm-hmm, terms of just the physicality of children, the, mm-hmm, ongoing demand of children. So I think, you know, she was this very ladylike, you know, luncheon-loving, scalloped soap in the soap dish kind of a person. And if you have a big, messy family of kids, I think that was a bit more challenging for her. And it extended even to her grandchildren. I saw her. It was just, physicality was a very difficult thing for her.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think she didn't single me out in that way. I think all of us suffered from that lack of affection. But it wasn't all just horrible. I mean, one of the things I'll always be grateful to my birth family is that I was brought up, and I'm hoping many of your listeners can identify with this, I was brought up with a real love of words. Mm-hmm. And in our household, that was so important. The joy to be found in reading, the joy to be found in poetry, in nonsense, all of that was very much encouraged in us. And, you know, as we were talking in the green room before the show, you know, every writer starts out as a reader. And one of the things that continues to strengthen us as writers is to continue to read and to share what we read with other writers,
mm-hmm,
which, by the way, is another thing I think you guys are doing so well. It's my belief that one of the best thing writers can do is to connect with other writers.
Oh, I absolutely believe that.
Because that helps us, it fuels us, because writing itself is an essentially a solitary, mm-hmm, passion, procedure, fear, I don't know, whatever you want to call it.
Vocation.
You usually do it by yourself, so it's great to connect with other writers. You're performing a real service here for writers in having this show.
Well, thank you. We've been doing it for almost 4 years, so.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, we've read a lot of books.
we've read a lot of books.
Excellent.
And we have an outstanding, we have a huge following, so we're pretty proud of that.
Yeah.
Well, hi out there, everybody.
They're out there. And as a matter of fact, we can now take phone calls. So after the break at 7:25 or 7:30, we'll give out the phone number in case anybody wants to give a call and talk to you.
Oh, gosh, that'd be great.
Yeah, we do that. We do that for our guests that we really like.
Oh, bless your heart.
Yeah.
Jim, do you have a question or can I ask one? You haven't really talked to her too much yet. So do
I talked to her the other night. I mean, I got all my stuff out early. No,
so
I have been in the Bob Marshall Wilderness with my brother Wally.
Yeah,
he used to live up in Missoula. We only made a little day trip out there just to take a look at it. And of course, we also had to go see the buffalo farm and the ranch or whatever it is. And, you know, you have to go see all that stuff when you're in Missoula.
Sure.
You know, and then. I've done rapids in several rivers and they're fun, but you really got to hang on because, you know, if you don't know how to swim, you're in deep, deep doo-doo.
Oh, yeah.
And that water gets cold and people don't understand. Even in the summertime, that water is cold.
Oh, immensely.
And it's all...
Immensely. And, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say it's all snow runoff. So, you know, it stays cold. It doesn't ever really warm up too much.
Yep. And the year that we did it, so I was 62 and had never done any kind of a wilderness journey.
Oh, wow.
I'd spent a couple of Girl Scout overnights, my total floating time on the river was an afternoon in one summer Sunday going down the Delaware River in an inner tube. So, and I'm not a high-risk kind of taker person. I've always felt like I don't downhill ski. I don't skydive. I don't rock climb. Because I just want my life to pass before my eyes that one time, right there at the end where it's supposed to. But this was proposed as a float trip. They didn't say it was going to be a rapids trip, so
they weren't very truthful. They were not very truthful to you, I mean.
Well, they were as truthful as they could be, but it was a really heavy snow year, so the river was a lot higher and a lot faster than anybody was anticipating.
And they get really fast, and you know, you don't see the rocks coming up. Until you're on top of them. And then all of a sudden it's like, oops, rip. There goes the raft.
Yeah.
So this river trip you guys took, well, this whole camping thing, because it wasn't totally river trip. I mean, you did horses, you did, you know, the pack train thing. You guys probably had a great time. Was it cathartic for you to get out there in the wilderness and do this, whether it would have been with your family or not?
I think that it was with family members was really important for me in terms of how I eventually came out and felt healed. I don't think I would have had quite the same experience if I just said, well, let's book this trip with these people. First of all, I probably wouldn't have done it because part of it was simply to, you know, to get to know my younger brother even better. I've always loved him, but he goes out in the wilderness every year, so I thought I'm never really going to know him unless I go out into the wilderness with him. Mm. And my younger sister had done it. And you know, one of the things that happens at a memorial service is you certainly remember the dearly departed, but you also remember the ticking clock.
Mm-hmm.
So you go, you know, if I'm ever going to do this, now would be the time to do it.
Yeah.
So I think that was really important for me to be able to have that time with them,
mm-hmm.
and for us to work together in this really remarkable way that you have to do. You have to, as you know, when you take these trips, you have to work with one another, and you have to be trusting, and it's kind of people at their best.
Right.
Really, everybody respecting one another and laughing around the campfire.
Oh, yeah. I mean, getting drunk around the campfire, too.
Well, there's a little bit of that, too.
Well, you kind of almost have to.
My brother loves really good scotch.
Oh, yeah. Well, I kind of got that from reading your story. But you know, that's almost a necessity because, you know, that kind of opens people up, especially sitting around a campfire at night. You know, everybody pass around a bottle of scotch or a bottle of whatever you got. And you, nobody gets really drunk, but it, you get enough just to kind of like get talky. And just everybody starts talking. And it's really kind of good to have that happen because you get a lot of stuff out.
I found
that kind of interesting because in the book, you kind of flip back and forth between growing up in the household with everybody in the 50s and 60s. And you and I must be very close in age because I felt like I was with a lot of the things, not so much with the relationship with your folks, but a lot of the other things. It was like, oh my gosh, I remember shoe shopping. I remember gym class and all of the awkwardness that goes on as, you know, we go through the awkward stage as teenagers and the girls around us are developing differently. And I was always the one that had to make the phone call to find a friend. And, you know, there was a lot of things where there was one scene where I almost was, you talk about redoing the kitchen for your mom.
Yeah, with the red linoleum countertops.
And I actually wept. I mean, when you write that, like you were right there still doing it. You could remember it. So everything about the process and even the colors of what was on the kitchen curtains and all, and then the reaction or non-reaction of your mom, I actually wept. I felt so badly for you. But you give us a lot of detail and conversation. Did you keep journals when you were a kid, or do you still today? Are you a journal writer?
I'm an occasional journal writer. But it's not, I have never been one of those people that actually absolutely does it every day. And that's what I think is interesting about the writing process, that it's so different for everyone. Some people do that every day. What happens to me, and I also recommend this for writers, is that if I feel something knocking at my consciousness, it's like, something wants to be said, something wants to be explored. Writing for me is the best way to do that. And I find if I have a specific thing, like, say, for instance, this renovation of the kitchen that I did, which was nothing I set out to do. It just happened step by step by step. I find if I go back to the experience and I relax a little bit, I take a couple deep breaths, and I begin to focus on what my sense memories are. So I began to remember the kitchen as it was. And I think we all carry this kind of memory within us. And so when I went back to that, I was feeling things and smelling things. And just this is all internally. But often when we do that, then the emotional stuff comes up as a result of it. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I will write down exact, like we took a trip last year to Israel. Somebody sponsored us on a trip to Israel, but they didn't give us any time to write or reflect at all. It was just thing after thing after thing after thing. And I found that the night before we left, I woke up in the middle of the night and I just started writing all of these sense impressions that I had and these emotional impressions, which I then came back and formed into a longer narrative. But so sometimes it's helpful to write it if you're feeling it very strongly in the moment. But I would also encourage writers to trust that if there's something really that you really want to say, you really want to work out, or you don't even quite know what it is, but you have a strong impulse to address it, to just begin going back to whatever those sense details are, and you'll be amazed at how much you remember.
Well, because I know the wilderness sections of the book, you give us a lot of detail. I felt like I was right going down that river with you and such. But not as much conversation. We were just talking about, you know, being around the campfire at night. And since the wilderness was kind of is the healing part of your story, you didn't share with the same kind of detail of conversation of what went on between all of you. Except there didn't seem to be any yelling at each other when you finally, you know, got out of the river. Like, how come you didn't tell me about, you know, it seems like there was a lot of love there and trust between you all.
Yes, there was.
But it was as a reader, it's a different experience. The your childhood versus the wilderness trip.
Yes. Yes, it is. And part of that is because the wilderness trip itself was so incredibly physically demanding and emotionally demanding in terms of, oh my gosh, you know, sticks are coming at my eyes. What can we do? Oh, great, now we're over this. Oh, but we can't even process that we just did that successfully because now here's another river hazard. And so of course, we laughed and we had memories, but the healing part was not so much in, although, you know, our family loves to sit around and talk about itself, so that was nothing new. But it was less that kind of reflective emotion and more... more realizing that in the wilderness, like being in the wilderness and on this river rapids was to me such a great metaphor for growing up in a family.
Mm-hmm.
And family life is completely unpredictable, and various things grow various ways, and various people take their own journeys, and you cannot predict what they're going to be. All you can do is react as best you can in the moment. But for me, the real gift of the wilderness was that, you know, while we are extremely vulnerable in the wilderness in one way, as we are extremely vulnerable in childhood, it is amazing to me that none of the things that we cook up in childhood to try and survive, like you can't entertain the wilderness, you can't compete with it, you can't charm it, you can't lie to it, but you can't disappoint it either, which is one of the things.
That's true.
You just deal with it as it comes up. And it's not that you can't feel resentful, oh my gosh, why didn't we stop at that campsite? But you can't hold on to it because you've got other stuff to deal with.
Yeah, you got
to
let
it. You can't get angry at a storm.
Right. You're trying to stay in the boat.
It's like, that's the
storm. Yeah.
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 So I learned to let go of a lot of stuff as a result.
Oh, yeah. It's like, you know, it rained the third or fourth day we were out on that trip across the valley, Death Valley. And, you know, where are you going to go? There is no place to go.
Right.
So, you know, you're in the middle of a freaking desert. There is, you know, all you got is dead crap and rocks, you know.
Yes.
And so, I mean, so the only thing you can do is put your slicker on and, you know, hope to stay kind of dry. You know,
yeah.
But that's all you can do. And you're right. You have to get rid of the anger because you immediately get mad because it's raining. But then you think, yeah. Oh, man, what am I going to do about it? Nothing.
So that's the lesson to bring back into your workaday
you let it go.
Life, you know, back at home, wherever that might be, is those lessons.
it doesn't help you there either.
Yeah. You know,
you use the term family as landscape throughout the book, and I had never thought about family as a landscape. That is, how did that come to you? Where did that concept come to you?
Again, I think when we really need something from our, you know, from that mysterious source of inspiration that we all carry within us, and we just really, we're looking for it, and we're looking for it, and then we forget about it for a while, and then we look for it some more, and then we forget about it. One day, it just kind of rises. It rises to the surface, and I was just blessed one day to go, oh, my gosh, that's what this is like. And interestingly enough, I had done writing about the family before this wilderness journey, and the image of the family as a landscape actually preceded the river trip. By many years.
Mm-hmm.
So it's why then when I got onto the river, I went, oh, I can see how this is like that. And also how, you know, we travel through our lives in this way.
Well, yeah.
And various people cannot be other than they are. And so that's a helpful thing to realize. Because and I'm not saying that we ignore stuff that's been done to us or that we never express that or whatever. It's just we find a way then to let go of it once we've fully expressed it.
Right. Mm. Right. It's kind of like you have to get on your knees and pay homage to life because it's life. You know, you're not going to change it. It isn't going to change you. It's like nature. You know, you're not going to change nature, and nature doesn't care if it pisses you off. You know, it's still going to be there. Hey, we have to take a break here. Don't go away, Irene. If you would, please just hang tough. And Bobby
sure
Jane, have you got your script?
Oh, do I have my script?
Yes,
are you talking
ma'am.
To me now?
Yes, ma'am.
I guess I do.
Well, would you like to dig it out? Or?
Shoot, no, I have it.
Okay.
I should have rewritten it.
Well, I'm giving you music right now.
Okay. So spring has arrived. It is the time to refresh your outfit. What events do you have coming up? An outdoor music festival or a trip to the mountains? A horseback ride? Adventure? Out West Shop is just what you need to revive your spirits and reboot your wardrobe. Cool, hip, boho top, stylish boots from Dan Post, and great-looking jackets are just a few of the fashion essentials offered for men and ladies. Find it all at www.outwestshop.com. Enter coupon code SPRING and save $10 on your order. Call today toll-free 1-877-340-9378. Out West delivers the West door-to-door, coast-to-coast, and around the world. And it's always a great day out West.
Hey, J. Michael here for All Dogs Rule. You know, if you're planning a trip and there's no way you can take your little canine buddy, how about considering All Dogs Rule Day Camp and Sleepover? That is right. All Dogs Rule Day Camp and Sleepover is the premium place for your four-legged friends to spend their time away from you, and probably happily so. If you want a place where you know your buddy will be safe, have lots of attention, and being able to play with other dogs, goats, sheep, horses, and more humans, then All Dogs Rule is the place for you. Acres of play space, grass, orange trees, the gorgeous Sespe River, and all with no stress. And extras if you want. All you need to do is ask. So when your dog returns home, you'll have to ask, whose vacation was better? Well, you know, it's going to be the dogs. So check them out. Their website at alldogsrule.com or give them a call at 805-524-1100. That's alldogsrule.com. And we are back. It is now 7:32. We are on the phone with Miss Irene O'Garden. And if you'd like to call and talk to Irene tonight, the number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. Again, that number is 818-602-4929. Oh, I have a little announcement to make, Bobby Jean, before we keep going. And are you there?
I'm here.
Oh, Russ and his girlfriend Karen, after 20 years, are getting married.
Oh, that's exciting for them. Did they have a date?
Yes, 1st of June, and they're going to be married in Yellowstone. And Karen's sister, I believe, is going to be performing the ceremony.
Oh, Irene, how wonderful.
Russ is our co-host on the fourth Thursday of every month.
Oh,
that's wonderful.
And his company is All Dogs Rule, so there you go. So we're happy for Russ, and it's all we say to Russ is it's about time. Okay, can we break away from your book a little bit, Irene, and let's talk about your process, your writing process a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is a show that we kind of gear towards new writers, and I'd like to see what your process is when you sit down to write. Do you sit down with a word count in mind, or do you sit down with just, you know, getting a particular piece out, or do you just catch as catch can?
Well, word count, it never figures into what I do until somebody's asking me for something. But even then, I can't start with that in mind. Mm-hmm. It's too intimidating for me. Although I do write for something called Read 650, which is a wonderful spoken word event in New York City and elsewhere. And we are limited to 650 words. In a personal essay form, so I do pay attention to the word count there because
well, you have to,
because that's what they're looking for, and which, by the way, is a really good exercise to see if you can tell a personal essay in 650 words, to have it begin, middle, and end somewhere, to have a nice dramatic arc to it. So that is a good exercise. But generally, what I'll do is I'll start longhand. For all my talking about not having a journal, of course I have a notebook that I write in, especially when something is really on my mind. So I'll start there with very rough wording, or just trying to capture what it is wants to be said through me. Mm-hmm. And then I'll take that and then enter it into the computer and shape it a little bit more and keep on going back to it. My process, there are some people who just blat out on the page and they just write and write and write, and I'm a slower writer. My husband John is a fast writer, and I have seen him literally being able to write when a jackhammer was outside his window. We were having something replaced. There's a jackhammer, and he's in there writing away. Now, I need to have a little more quiet than that, and I need to take a little more time. It's almost like an altered state, if you will. So sometimes I'll put music on to kind of help encourage that relaxation. And then when I have something down on the page, I will go back over it and I like to compare my process to the process of marquetry, the inlaying of wood, you know, taking little tiny pieces of wood and making a picture of it that is sometimes on the top of a table or a chest of drawers or something. And so I really like to weigh and measure and taste and listen and be sure that the word that I'm using is really the one that I want to use. So it's a constant asking myself questions. Is that really it? Is that? So I have my, years ago, I opened up a dictionary on a stand on one side and a thesaurus on the other side just because I thought that would make me feel like a writer. But I cannot tell you how often I'm pouring through those pages going, no, I think there's a word that's closer than the one. So, and that comes from that love of words. And I write for the ear as well. The sound of words is very important.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you just wanted to read this book aloud.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thanks. Well, and so, yeah, I just keep going over something until that feeling of satisfaction arises, or at least that feeling of, well, I think I can live with this. You know, sometimes we don't get it exactly the way we want to get it, but most of the time, if we give ourselves space and quiet to reflect, we can actually end up saying what it is we want to say, which is the great reward in writing.
Right. You know, I personally keep a dictionary open on one page, and I keep a thesaurus open on another, so I refer back and forth all the time because I don't always have the best word in brain, and you know, sometimes I go, man, no, something's got to be better than run fast. You know what I mean? So go to the thesaurus and, you know, look, sprint. There you go.
Yes.
So, but I don't know about you, and I'm going to ask you this. Do you ever get into a position where you just absolutely have to get something down, and you go into a feverish state, and you just write until you get it, and it's done?
Oh, yeah. Yes, although I'll still have to go back over it just once or twice before I can feel free to let it go. Yes, definitely. And that's a wonderful feeling, too, as a writer, just to feel that rush
of
words.
Absolutely.
You know, like I felt that waking up in the night wanting to, in Israel, wanting to write down what I saw. And I used much of what I wrote that night in the finished piece.
Right, right. And in fact, this book I just finished called Jefferson's Chance, the last two or three chapters just came fast because it was something that just, I mean, I didn't want to give up on it was part of a Comanche raid, and I didn't want to stop, you know, because I wanted the characters to feel what I was feeling.
Yes.
I don't know if that makes any sense, but
yeah, because the reader feels it too.
Yeah, I wanted to impart the feeling that these guys had laying in this ditch, looking at these 40 Comanches coming at them, and I wanted the reader to feel that fear, but they can't be afraid because they got their buddy next to them.
Well, and then as the reader, you don't want to get up and, you know, do errands or make dinner or whatever. You're caught in the moment.
In that moment,
just
right.
Just as you were caught writing it.
Finish those two chapters before you go eat.
Yeah,
yeah.
Irene, in your book, not every chapter, but you would leave a little cliffhanger.
You did.
Oh, my gosh. There were times when I'd go, how many more pages? Because I got to do something. And then there'd be that little cliffhanger.
But then you'd leave a cliffhanger there, and it would immediately, like, it'd be in your childhood, and then all of a sudden, you're on the river again. You go, wait a minute, what happened here? And you have to, then you're thumbing through, you go, wait a minute.
Like those little sentences that were so powerful.
Exactly.
And engaging. Irene, when you were writing, did they just came? Or did you go back and go, oh, you know, I need a little something here, you know, or did it just, was it just part of your writing? Does that make sense?
I would say that the transitional, those places, I had to write the chunks first.
Right.
And then go, how do they,
okay.
You know, because actually I wrote the Montana thing all as one piece.
Okay, I wonder.
But I already had the family,
right.
A lot of the family piece. So I wanted to go, how do they relate to one another?
Mm-hmm.
So those transitional things I did have to seek. They didn't naturally, I began to seek where the natural connection
was,
put it that way.
I noticed that you meshed it pretty well. So
yeah, I almost felt like I was looking at a storyboard where you could have moved things around, like, oh, I'm going to have this wilderness piece off of here. But, and I thought, well, that wilderness piece could have come off of another, you know, like I wondered if you kind of had things on index cards or, you know, and you could kind of like move them around until you liked the way that laid out.
Well, it's funny. I also like, I have to print up and lay out. I can't do it all on the computer. I need the physicality of sometimes cutting a piece of paper and taping it to another piece of paper so that I can look at it of a piece. And stretch it way out, you know, across a half of a room to go, does this follow here? Can this follow there? But it's actually, the secret to this book is that both of the braided narratives are actually chronological. So it's, I didn't really do any flipping around in time as such, but the flipping back and forth from story to story was important, but pretty much everything, you know, I start out as a young child and grow up, and the story starts on day one in Montana, and, you know.
That's everybody's story. We start out as a young child and grow up.
That's so interesting.
That's it.
Did you ever have a thought, before Bobby Jean asks you the question, did you ever have a thought about combining, or making these two separate volumes, your childhood and then the river trip?
I actually didn't, because I didn't think either of them stood on their own.
Okay.
With enough interest. I mean, certainly I thought maybe the family part for years, I thought, well, maybe there's a way to blah, 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 blah. But I just thought it just didn't, for all the emotion that it held, I didn't think it really worked completely.
Mm-hmm.
And the Montana thing would have been nice, but I think you would have lost the gravitas of the, and also the entertaining aspect of the childhood. So so I think they would not have worked, either one, as well on their own as they do together.
Right.
And I think that's always a writer's challenge, to go,
how am
I going to structure
exactly
this thing I care about?
Exactly. Okay, Bobby Jean, you're on.
I don't think we've asked you the big question yet, and I'm looking at the clock. So do you ever experience, as a writer or poet, a writer's block? And if so, how do you get around it? Or maybe you don't believe in it?
I certainly have had times when I've wanted to write and I feel like I can't write. And, you know, at those times, it's, I think, really good to sit down and just write that. Just say, if you were to go back over some of the notebooks that I've had over, you know, over the last few years, trying to figure out what the structure of this book is, you know, I'm never going to do it, I'm blah, 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 blah. So you write that out. You go, and who's going to care about, blah, blah. So you write that out. And once you've written that out, then you, maybe you're not going to write on the project that you, that means the world to you. But maybe you notice, you know, something in bloom, or maybe you've had a really interesting exchange with somebody, and you just went, they kind of caught you as an interesting character. So maybe you write that down. You don't always have to be working on the big thing that means so much to you, because really, we are. Those of us who think in this way are kind of always observing, which is really what writing is, I think. I think where it's observing and it's listening, and it's putting that together with our vocabulary. Mm-hmm. So we're always observing, And we're always listening. We're listening to ourselves. We're listening to the people around us. So that's two-thirds of the process right there. And once you put words to it, once you, and I believe in keeping expanding our vocabulary as much as we can, which is what that reading does for us, reading as widely as we can, because that's our palette. If we have that there, then when it comes time for us to go, like, well, I really want to do this. And, you know, and the other thing is, heaven knows, I started to write a novel. It's taken me years to go, you know what, that's really not my art form. And I will stop myself mm-hmm. from writing it. Mm-hmm. So sometimes writer's block is a good indication of perhaps maybe go a different direction.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I'm a better poet than I am. I can write when I know what the plot is, like I know my childhood, I know what happened on this trip, but I'm not like you, Jim. I am not. I admire you and my husband and people who can just create these incredible events happening in characters' lives, but that's not the writer I am, so mm-hmm. I can block myself if I say, well, a writer has to write fiction. That'll block myself right away. So, just accepting what comes to you naturally in the form that seems appropriate.
What's next for Irene O'Garden?
Yeah, what's next?
Well, I actually have a trip to the Bay Area at the end of April, the beginning of May, where I'll be doing some appearances and some book signings and some radio out there. I have another project. I have a visual project that I've been working on for a while. That's not like anything I've ever done. And anybody who's ever been to my website will go, whoa, you do a lot of different things, and
I do.
But actually, if you're very careful, you can see most of them are word related. So yes, I do letter, and I make, you know, I've made handmade books and done calligraphy, and I've also been an actress. But it's all about amplifying the meaning of the word. So whether it's speaking it with meaning, or whether it's lettering it with meaning, or whether it's writing it as poetry, it really is all centered around the word. So this visual project will have words attached to it, but it's not like anything I've done before, which is, I think we all know this as writers, it's great to open ourselves up to absolutely new avenues, get that new energy rushing through us, and celebrate the creativity that is our birthright and that we have within us all the time.
I like
well,
it.
I think the celebration of the word, as we seem to be a culture going more and more to the emoji and finding, you know, other ways to describe what we're thinking, I'm a little concerned for the word. So I'm excited that there are, you know, writers like you out there that continue to celebrate and honor the word, because it feels like it's kind of on a demise.
Well,
it feels that way, but people will always talk
to one another. That's right.
People will and actually, in a sense, more people are writing now than ever have before,
exactly.
Because they're emailing, they're texting. So I think it's just about all of us reminding ourselves of how precious this capacity is and how to use these words with as much integrity as we can.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree. And unfortunately, Irene, we are out of time.
I can't believe it. That went so fast.
I know. Well, I'm telling you, we're strictly professionals here. We have no clue what we're doing, but we do it well.
Yes, you do.
Okay. I've sent you a mug today. It's leaving tomorrow. Oh. You should have gotten an email telling you that it's on its way.
I did indeed. Bless your heart. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. That was the very last mug, so you're lucky. You got the very last mug.
Oh, bless you.
Okay, Irene O'Garden, thank you so much for joining us. Her book is Risking the Rapids, How My Wilderness Challenge Healed My Childhood. It is available on Amazon and all online booksellers. And I'm sure that if you go to her website, which is Irene...
IreneOGarden.com.
There you go. You can find her books and where to find everything. And again, her email address is there. And thank you so much for joining us and taking the time out. I know it's late there.
That's all right. It was like a great late after dinner kind of a deal.
Oh, there you go. There you go. And the coffee cup does, as Bobby Jean knows, does hold more than coffee.
Yes, it does.
And thank you again for joining us. And now we have to make some announcements, and then we're going to be gone. So thanks again.
Okay, great. Bobby Jean, such a pleasure.
Thanks,
Jim.
Oh, you're very, very welcome. My best to John.
Yes.
Will do.
Okay.
His best to you.
Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And Irene O'Garden, what a nice lady.
Wow, so interesting.
Oh, I know. She's just all there, and that hours flew by.
Absolutely.
Wow.
But we've never had anybody answer the writer block question to just say, even write about that.
I know, huh?
Stuck, you know?
I know, huh?
It's like, oh.
Next week, we have a gentleman that's pretty prolific. He's big in the Western field, Mike Blakely. His new book is A Sinister Splendor. It's about the Mexican-American War. Russ will be here, and it's also 511 pages, so there's one of them big ones, Bobby Jean.
We have Mike Blakely on next week.
Mike Blakely, not Michael Blake.
Blakely. I know, Mike Blakely.
Mike
yeah,
Blakely.
Oh my gosh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, he's New York Times bestselling author.
I know.
He's good. And, of course, April 9th, we have, again, Junie Fisher. And the 13th and 14th is the Cowboy Festival in Newhall. And it's at the William S. Hart Park. And, of course, the entry is free again this year. So make a plan to go out there with your family and stop by the Buckaroo Bookshop. My name will be there, but I won't be.
But I will be.
But
and
Bobby
Bob Brill
Jean,
will be.
Bobby
so
Jean will
you're
be.
You're represented.
No, Bob Brill will be there with his new book, Lancer.
Yeah.
The Lancer Hero of the West. It's the New Orleans Affair. His paperback book just came out. So that will be there. And that's about all I've got for tonight. So, Bobby Jean, have yourself a great, great evening. And I will talk to you a week from next Thursday. So you aren't here next week.
No, but I will be listening.
Oh, well.
I'm excited.
Mike Blakely, yeah. We always appreciate when we get new listeners and old listeners. So there you have it. All righty. For Bobby Jean and myself, Jim Christina, and Bob Brill, who is unfortunately sick and not in the studio tonight, we are out of here.